meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. Sébastien Bachelet speaking. I am the rapporteur of this subgroup, and welcome all of you. It's a restart of this group after 2 weeks without call, but a lot of work were done by our reviewer for the ICANN Ombuds Office, and the part of the main part of this call is to discuss with them their findings and to see where we are and how we can organize for the next part of the work. I have no prepare any slide myself, and you will not have your usual slide deck, but the one prepared by, I guess, both staff and Phil and Deborah. And I guess the roll call will be taken by from the EC room. Is there anyone who are just online? It's time to tell us. And as you can see, we have both recording, but also the captioning of this call. I'm sure that it will be a good improvement for all our call when using that tool. Anyone online? Not sorry, on the phone only. Okay. If not, thank you very much, and let's go to the agenda item number 2, and I will give the floor. I don't know if Lars, you want to introduce Deborah and Phil's presentation, or if they just take the floor. But Lars, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. This is Lars. I think Phil and Deborah will have it from here. Thanks.
Okay, then thank you, Phil, Sebastian speaking, and Phil or Deborah, it's your time, and you run the show now. I will mute myself. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Sebastian. It's Phil Khoury here. Look, I will just walk through the slides and throw to Deborah from time to time, and hopefully that will stop you all from getting sick of the sound of my voice. Where we are now is sort of in the middle of drafting the report. So some parts are done and some parts are not done in the usual state these things are in. So this is an opportunity for us to test the ideas with some people who are closer to the process. So that's the intention here. So we're looking forward to questions, feedback, you know, anything that you think either makes or doesn't make sense in here. So I will proceed. I think, Yvette, you've given me the control of the slides, so I will test that. Yes, perfect. So look, the pack here is really follows the structure of the report as close as we can. There's a little introduction, talk a little bit about our process. People on this hookup know all about the process, so we don't need to dwell on that, but this is just letting you know what we expect to be in the report. Well, there's a bit of a description under Section 3 of the current situation, and we've put more into that than we would normally do simply because we found there were so many people who didn't really have a complete picture of how complaints work and also how the Ombudsman's Office works in around ICANN. So again, we're looking for your eagle-eyed proofreading there to make sure we haven't got things terribly wrong. In Section 4, we're going to digress a little bit and talk a bit about the types of ombudsman schemes that are out there and how they vary and the types of evaluation criteria that ICANN might use to apply to its Ombudsman's Office. And again, that's really by way of background, and so people kind of understand, you know, how you can choose to design your office and evaluate it. The fifth section has quite a bit of stakeholder feedback in it. So the results from the interviews and the survey, we got a pretty good response to the surveys, and we've been able to use a lot more of that information than we'd anticipated, which has been good, but it's slowed us down a little bit. The sixth section is to just to run through the discussion around, well, what would be a way of improving how the Ombudsman's Office works, what are the complications around that, and then finally to some draft recommendations. So I'll step through those now, but just to explain that those headings are really loosely based on the report structure. So our process, which you're all pretty familiar with, will be just set out in as briefly as we can manage in the report, just to make sure people understand the extent to which we have been able to engage with the community and talk to people and get sort of meaningful feedback. We have done a little bit of a literature search for some comparisons and to do a little bit of analysis of how the Ombudsman's Office works, but this is not an academic paper. It's really trying to be as practical as possible. You'll see that number 8 on that slide is about the next steps, which is, again, something we'd like to test with you. Okay, so the current situation, we make a point that this is quite a young, sort of highly technical, kind of frontier ecosystem. So it's not a stable environment with years and years of precedent to guide it. It's evolving rapidly, and complaints will follow those changes. This is an environment in which there are many complaints channels, and the Ombudsman is really a tiny fraction of that whole system of ways in which people can complain about ICANN-related matters. And there are quite sort of different dynamics to the different sources of complaints, which we think isn't well understood. We'll provide a description of the key features of the current model and how it works, the techniques that are used, what powers for investigation, for remedies that are available to the current Ombudsman. An observation that we will make is that the office was originally conceived pretty much as an internal Ombudsman, internal in the sense of internal to the ICANN community, but applied to the mix of the ICANN world, that's not the perfect fit, we don't think. So we think there's sort of opportunities to, now that there's some experience, to adapt how the Ombudsman is configured to fit ICANN a little better. We'll provide a little bit of data. Herb's been helping us with just numbers of complaints and that sort of thing, which hopefully will help people's understanding of how the thing works and what might happen if you made any tweaks to it. And then the final thing we think is a dimension to the current environment, of course, is the ideas that people are coming up with to use the Ombuds Office as a honest broker in a number of processes around ICANN. So we can talk about those in the report, but again, you guys know all about that sort of thing. I won't dwell on it endlessly. So the little diagram here shows an idea we want to test with people about how to chunk up the types of complaints that come to the Ombudsman's Office. Now, we've worked from complaints that we're aware of, existing complaints, but also been thinking about what are the types of complaints that might be made in this environment, even if they haven't appeared yet. Or you might choose to admit them and get additional complaints coming to the Ombudsman's Office that's currently out of jurisdiction. So we've clumped up one group under the heading of governance, and so that's around decisions made by elected people or by community forums, so constituent groups, And also we've included in that group other review mechanisms. So to some extent the Ombudsman's Office can be used as a opportunity to relitigate a matter that has been through another ICANN mechanism. And so where the Ombudsman's being asked to look at something that a decision that's been made by or conduct by what we're calling small g governance, we've grouped that into this one sort of setting. And there are some issues that arise if you try and give an ombudsman the power to set aside or review a decision that has been made by an elected group or group that holds sort of electoral office. The second one that we've grouped is the corporation complaints, and these are generally service or operational processes, ICANN staff conduct outward facing rather than to each other, decisions that are made by staff or by contracted parties. Now there's tens of thousands of those, and only a fraction of those might come to the Ombudsman, but they again have a different dynamic to them, different qualities than the community complaints or the governance complaints. So finally is the community complaints, and in this group we've put really it's the disputes between groups, disputes or complaints about an individual within the ICANN community, how people behave to each other, whether ICANN consultative processes were fair, or escalated disputes that have come up from within ICANN, groups of ICANN members, or members of the community, I should say, more accurately. So look, we don't need immediate reactions, but most welcome. But we'll be asking you to have a bit of a think about whether they logically make sense to you and whether we've put the right complaints in the right buckets for the purposes of discussion in the report. So I'm going to just move on.
Phil, it's Sebastian speaking. Yes, I suggest that you go through your presentation and we come back to each slide at the end. Like that, we will have a full picture of your thoughts, and then we will be able to give you our knowing everything you want to tell us before we jump into a conversation, if you agree with that. Thank you.
Agreed. Phil Curry again. So let me just go to the next. So we looked at briefly at the types of ombudsman schemes, and again, they're not everybody's sort of fully familiar with all of this that we spoke to, so we thought there was some value in setting some of this out, but without turning it into a 400-page thesis. We're trying to be as brief as we can, but at least to sort of set out how different these sorts of things work. We're also putting in some slides comparing the different standards and criteria that people can apply in this sort of space, again depending on what sort of model ombudsman you want to use in your particular environment. And so when you look at the standards, Frank, the first ombudsman had a set of some 54 checklist sort of questions for testing whether an ombudsman's office was meeting its mission. There are international standards, organisation standards that apply to complaints handled internally and externally. Australia and New Zealand have benchmarks. The International Institute of Ombudsmen have benchmarks, and so on. And that's all far too complicated for the purposes of this, I think, and we've just suggested a simpler model pulled from the relevant bits of other standards that could be just used to practically meet ICANN needs as a set of evaluation criteria. But of course that all depends on how you design it in the first place. So that's by way of background. When we come to the stakeholder feedback, I might throw to you, Deborah. Just are you there?
I just unmuting. year we reflected on what we were told in interviews and also in the survey, and we had, I think we've mentioned before, we had 84 community responses to the survey, including three that were in languages other than English, which we obtained, for which we obtained translations. We did find that there was useful information in this, and we felt that we'd been quite successful in getting a good response to the survey. But nevertheless, once you break down the survey responses into different categories and look at, for example, complaints that were found to be outside jurisdiction or complaints that were, in fact, that went through the resolution process, the numbers start to be necessarily quite small. So we do have to be very cautious about what we conclude from the surveys. We'd also say that survey respondents self-selected, you know, themselves. They and typically you find that people will respond to a survey in this sort of situation where they've got a strong view, they've had a sort of intense experience, and so they were really happy or they were really unhappy. And so I think when you look at ratings, you have to take that into account. And often we found that there was quite a degree of polarity and there weren't that many people in the middle. And I think that's why. We said to everyone that we would keep their feedback confidential, and that's absolutely paramount. We did, however, though, give survey respondents quite a lot of opportunity to provide free text, and we find that more meaningful in many ways. That's the flavour around, you know, a bold rating. And so we've tried to, we're proposing in the report to extract the essence from as many of those comments as we can to give people that flavour around what respondents were thinking. In terms of what we learnt, we did find that there was, there were higher ratings in terms of the process elements of how the Ombudsman's Office had operated and had worked for people. So higher ratings around things like confidentiality, whether, you know, they were listened to, investigated, the matter was investigated, whether they, got a timely response, those sorts of process type matters, rather than ratings around the actual outcome that was achieved. And that is very common in this sort of environment, particularly given, you know, the natural limits to what the office can actually provide to complainants. We did look at the ratings that we achieved in our survey and compared them with the ratings that Frank Fowler achieved in the survey that he undertook in 2008. And we thought there were some observations we could make about that, but we would really caution that it's very difficult to make hard and fast comparisons. And his sample numbers, for example, the number of people who had actually taken a complaint that was within jurisdiction to the Ombudsman's Office, his numbers were very, very low. He only had 7 complainants. So, you know, we think you've got to be cautious about those sorts of assessments. And we noted that his conclusion was, back in 2008, that the community were happy with the office, you know, were generally satisfied with the office. He had an independent reviewer who looked at the survey findings, and that reviewer cast a bit of a cautionary note and said, well, the sample size of those who'd actually taken a complaint to the office were very low, and a lot of the comments were very negative. So they weren't disagreeing with the conclusion, but cast a cautionary note. And I don't think that although our ratings were not that dissimilar, I don't think we would reach that conclusion. You know, our conclusion would be more that there was that there was some dissatisfaction or some sense of disappointment, and perhaps the ratings were a little lower than we would expect to see. So that probably is it enough. In terms of the stakeholder feedback. You can keep going if you like, Phil.
Okay. Look, I think there's just one other caveat I'd add to that slide, and that's really to say that people provided feedback that went back, that covered the period of all three ombudsmen. So some were, a handful were fairly recent, but a number involved the era of Chris as ombudsman and some the sort of latter period of Frank as Ombudsman. So again, we have to accept that that's another part of the data that we got that we have to allow for. Just to give you an example of some of the feedback, there's a couple of charts on this slide. This is the kind of thing that will be in the report, which will come to you. So if you look at the outcomes data on the first one, there's, you know, so small numbers, 22 total respondents, you know, sort of a spread of results there. I think you have to think about what conclusion will you draw from all of that. And one of the conclusions you can draw from all of that is that, you know, it's likely that indicates only, and perhaps only one in five people who've been through the Ombudsman's office would be a net promoter, someone who would be very positive about the results. And probably a significant number would be unsatisfied or, you know, an unresolved matter who would most likely not be giving terribly good feedback about it. So you always have to sort of allow for that. If you look at the second one around process, that's what Deborah was talking about, around asking much more specific questions about aspects of the process that you went through. And so you can see on the right-hand side the headings for each of those dimensions of how you would experience a complaint. And you can see confidentiality is the purple bar that goes right over into the between 4 and 5. Clearly very, very strong. Ombudsman's independence is better than half, as is the indicator that says, I felt the complaint was understood. The others are not terrible results by any stretch, but they are, you know, nonetheless on the sort of below half in terms of levels of satisfaction there. So that gives you a little bit of a feel for what people see as being the strengths within the Ombudsman process. So I'm moving to the next slide, and this is really where we're starting to draw our conclusions about a lot of that. I mean, we think that the overall aim should be really focused on the question of community confidence in fairness around ICANN. So the idea that the Ombudsman is looking at a whole range of matters around the ICANN community, we think is a strength, and you shouldn't lose that. And framing it around that sort of issue of community confidence is, we think, you know, an important way to think about it. This transition process, the transparency and accountability activity, provides an opportunity for some change and an opportunity, we think, for kind of a refresh of people's view of the Ombudsman version 2 or some such. And the key areas where you think you can strengthen the Ombudsman role is certainly around people's clarity and understanding of what the Ombudsman's office can do. We think the standing and authority of the Ombudsman is questioned by many and could use some strengthening. That's a sort of a subtle one, which we'll come back to in terms of detail. The independence of the office is another area where there are some perceptions that it's not as independent as it could be. And again, if you go back to the original goal of community confidence, then that's something pretty important to make sure is not just practically independent, but really hopefully beyond reproach. And then finally, it goes to the standing of the Ombudsman, but this question of reporting and transparency and people's awareness, not only of the existence of the Ombudsman, but awareness of what it can and can't do and the kind of work that it's involved in. And again, in all these areas, we're not proposing radical change. The Ombudsman's function is, you know, fairly close to the kind of design we would have come up with if we'd had a blank sheet of paper, but there are some tweaks that can be done in this area which we think will make a difference to the effectiveness of the Ombudsman and its contribution to ICANN. And then the final sort of area where we think, you know, change redefinition would be helpful is just to develop rather than responding to people's ideas for the Ombudsman doing new functions in a piecemeal way, that coming up with some principles that guide how you use the Ombudsman's office, and so that people understand what the consequences of involving the Ombudsman in an operational process is, you know, that limits the Ombudsman from reviewing it later on, or puts the Ombudsman at risk of being seen as part of management kind of thing. So some policy, simple policy, but a little bit of policy around that, how and when you can use the Ombudsman outside of strictly complaints activity, we think would be a helpful contribution. Now, I guess the other thing is just the expectation management thing we'd like to get across in the report, which is, look, there are some pressures for change. There are people who state their case around ICANN pretty forcefully, and we have to be sort of attuned to the environment there. There is a unique mix of needs for ICANN, and there are a number of what we think are pretty natural limitations to what would be called the Ombudsman's powers in other places. Now, here the Ombudsman has a pretty good run at investigation and getting access to information. In other settings, an Ombudsman has the power to set aside decisions or to order compensation or to put themselves, stand in the shoes of the decision maker and completely re-decide a matter. And we don't think those are, for the most part, they are not appropriate to the ICANN environment once you pull it apart and look at all the complaints. And I think it's sort of important for people to understand, you know, why Herb shouldn't be armed with six guns and sort of roaming around righting wrongs willy-nilly in the ICANN environment. So we talk about that a little bit in the draft. And then finally, for the recommendations, the bottom line from us is really that we think the Ombuds Office adds value, that people appreciate that it's there, and that it's a contribution to the fairness of the ICANN world. Clearly, some of the processes and skills and techniques that are being used are valued by the people who responded to us, but certainly we think there are some who feel it's a bit weak in its standing in the environment, and we think it could be adapted further to make a better fit and to better meet people's expectations. So we're not looking at throwing anything out. This is about adaptation and refinement rather than radical change. So the key recommendations are, firstly, under the heading of clarifying the role, because there are these different streams of complaints that come through, we think you need a high-level purpose, which we would revisit in the bylaws, a little bit of tweaking to the wording, but then to segment the types of complaints and different ways in which the Ombudsman's Office will approach those. And I think an example is that of what we mean in that space is that disputes between members of the community or between constituent bodies within the community lend themselves very readily to alternative dispute resolution techniques like conciliation and mediation. That's in an environment where you're bringing two parties together. In an environment where it's a, you know, there are fixed rules and the accusation is that they were, you know, used unfairly. Really, the Ombudsman's role in that space is all about checking to see that the process was followed and that people had an opportunity to put their case, that their confidentiality was protected and all that kind of thing. So you have quite a different sort of set of things that an Ombudsman can do in that environment. But you don't really want an Ombudsman trying to negotiate with a democratically elected sort of organisation applying the rules to try and find some middle ground. You just want to make make sure the process was fair and that there is consistency. So that's just one example. So that's the clarifying of the role and hopefully improving people's understanding. The second cluster of recommendations are around standing in authority. So I think there's an opportunity to refresh positioning signals here, and that would require a lot of people around the ICANN world to be talking about the Ombudsman's Office in a different way than they do today. So there'll be little things as simple as where is the Ombudsman at the conferences, when is the Ombudsman called on to speak, how do people talk about the Ombudsman's Office, how an Ombudsman's report is talked about and considered within the community. Very subtle things like that, which you can't legislate for, but you can set up with a communications program and some key messages. The second dot point we've got here is we think at the moment one of the areas of criticism is that decision makers aren't obliged to respond to an Ombudsman's report. We think the Ombudsman's Office could do more reports that are made public, again, subject to whether they're suitable for that and need to be kept confidential. But there should be a timing obligation on decision makers to respond. We've suggested 90 days, and we've suggested that they should publish their reasons for their response to the Ombudsman's report. Now, there would have to be a safety valve clause in there that allow for some things that would take longer than 90 days, but we think that's a sort of an important part of standing, is to reinforce the idea that when the Ombudsman speaks, the community listens. The third cluster is around independence. There's a little bit of tweaking we'd like to see in the way some greater proactivity from the office. That might be a resourcing issue. We need to talk all these things through with Herb. But I think the value add that can come from a skilled person who's focused on fairness can be heightened if they're able and encouraged to do more in the way of own motion inquiries and publishing reports around issues of fairness. We're also suggesting, I'm going to jump to the third dot point, some more independence in the employment basis. So a number of people commented that it's hard for the Ombudsman to be completely independent when a percentage of their pay is at risk, and it's the establishment of ICANN that decide whether the Ombudsman is paid that extra money or whether the Ombudsman gets an additional extension to their contract. And with the best will in the world, people will see that as not being fully independent, and we think that can be dealt with some minor changes to the way in which the Ombudsman is employed and paid and so on. We also think that we're proposing an advisory panel. Now that could be small, and the idea would be to keep it cheap, but to have that advisory panel take over much of the work that's currently done by the Governance Committee and the Remuneration Committee to act as a sort of council sounding board for the Ombudsman and as a support for the Ombudsman, oversee their performance, and encourage the Ombudsman to, in their development of a operational plan and development of a budget and all that sort of thing. Meeting wouldn't have to meet that often, but would act as that sort of support, almost like a board for the Ombudsman, but in this case obviously without governance authority. That could be done in a way that the panel is advising the board committees, but we think that the Ombudsman in the ICANN world does tend to operate a little bit in a vacuum, and having a couple of people on the advisory panel who could work to support the Ombudsman, be it a sounding board, would be excellent. And for example, that panel might have a couple of ICANN elder statesmen on it, and hopefully a couple of former ombudsmen or women who've, you know, had experience in an ombudsman environment and can add some informed help and support for the ombudsman. One of the things we picked up from the board committees was a bit of really sort of frustration about not knowing really how to do the performance reviews for an ombudsman, or not really knowing what the ombudsman ought to be doing. So we think that might help with that, guiding the work that the ombudsman, future ombudsman, do. So finally, to the fourth set of recommendations, which is around transparency. This is really just a chance to refresh the reporting. We think the satisfaction surveys could be reinstated in possibly a different way than they've been done before. A little bit more of the publishing of numbers, even though they're very small. We think that would all help a little bit with the reporting. We think more public reports when that's appropriate. And again, you know, I think there's been a couple in a very long period of time. It would not be a flood of these things, but they do create a bit of a stir in the sense that it shows the work that's going on. So we think there could be more of that. And I think requiring public responses will also help have people pay more attention to the work that the Ombudsman's Office is doing. Now, if I've just, there is a missing dot point here I didn't get put in, which is really, there'll be a recommendation for that policy around asking the Ombudsman to be part of a formal review process or to vet privacy requests or freedom of information requests or anything else that people come up with as a sensible thing to use the Ombudsman skills in. So that would be the fifth set of recommendations, which will be in the report. So I will stop there. Deborah, anything that I've forgotten, missed?
No, that's good.
Okay.
Sebastian, the next slide is really to be discussed at the end of the hookup. So I think I will hand over back to you for questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Phil. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Let's go back to your slide at the beginning and take them one by one and see if there are comments on the, each of the slides, and then if there are overarching questions or comments on your document and presentation. About the process, I don't think there are too much to discuss, except if I see someone raising a hand for that. If not, let's go to the current situation. I would like very much, if you have any comments, just raise your hand and we will take them. Okay, I think that the current situation is quite, an obvious or objective feedback on what is happening today, and maybe not so much to discuss and to ask questions. And let's go to this one, type of complaints. Any comments? If not, I will start. My question here, it's during the process of your review, appear a new complaints office or officer within ICANN staff, and sorry, I will not use organization. I know that staff or CEO decide to stole this word, but I can't change my habits, and I will still work through and talking about stuff. Then we have a complaints officer who are just a new one, and as maybe you know or maybe you don't know, we received a blog post made both by the ombudsman and the complaint officer telling us what is the difference between both of them without any consultation of any of us, but that's the life of this organization, it seems. But I wanted to know if this new office changed something in your thoughts during your work, or if you didn't take, I would say, any attention to that. That's my first point, because my impression in your type of complaints is that it's a generic type of complaints, or it is a type of complaints will need to be dealt by the ombuds office. Thank you. Feels back to you, or Deborah.
Thanks, Sebastian. I haven't seen the. I'm not sure if Deborah has, but I didn't see the communique from Herb and I've forgotten her name now. Your complaints officer, but
Krista Papak.
Oh, that's her, Krista. Look, we interviewed Krista when she first it was announced, and she had barely thought about it. So we had some ideas about what the CEO wanted as a result of that conversation. We talked about whether somebody suggested to us that the complaints officer might become part of the ombudsman's office, and we talked about that as a possibility. It's when you look at the complaints that come through the corporation, there are really so many by comparison to the ones that will come to the ombudsman. We ended up deciding that. That was unlikely to work, that the complaints officer's role was going to be much more closely linked to the CEO's view of the corporation and the services that are provided there and sort of management coordination, sort of flavour to it all. So again, when we put our draft report out, our thinking is in there. There's a sort of a page or so around that complaints officer. And, you know, we'll test our thinking with people, see if we've got it right. But Herb, if you wouldn't mind flicking us the link.
Actually, Phil, I've seen that communique. It is on the web. I mean, it doesn't go into a great deal of detail, but it is a bit helpful about the process and, you know, things like confidentiality. And I suppose it does... The complaints that the complaints officer will receive are like the complaints received by the compliance department. You know, they're large volumes, and we saw that for those complaints about the corporation, as we've categorised them, that generally the ombudsman's role, you know, should be to refer the complaints on if they happen to come to him or her first. To refer them on to the complaints officer or to the compliance department, but should sort of still take a bit of an interest and be thinking about issues like fairness of process, thinking about whether, you know, getting data from the complaints officer and equally from the compliance department, and thinking about whether there's a need for any change to process. So taking a bit more of a systemic view and... you know, that might lead to an own motion inquiry on occasions. It might lead to some recommendations for changes to those processes. So in many ways, we saw, you know, we were initially a bit unsure about the idea of the complaints officer and how it would fit in. And then as we sort of learnt more about volumes and thought about it, it seemed a bit like the complaints to the compliance department about contracted parties, that it is appropriate that it sort of sits outside the ombudsman's office, but the ombudsman's office can have an overview of that and make sure that those other complaints avenues are doing as they should be doing. So that was where our thinking got to at this point.
Yeah. Thank you, Deborah. And Sébastien speaking. I put the link for everyone into the chat if you want to have a look, and I am sure that it will be one point of discussion in one of our next call, but not today, obviously. The way you answer, I would like to see that in writing and able to discuss that. I think I get your points. One of my concerns is that we don't end up today or later in the battle of numbers and saying, I have the most number of complaints and I am the big one. We need to be sure that, yes, one is doing those complaints, the other one is able to do systemic review or systemic view of that, and how we deal with that for the community or people to know to whom they need to go and to whom they can expect help and answer. It's an important point. And as you know, I have written a paper now with this new blog post. I will review the document, but asking the question if we need just one complaint office and now we have two, or if we need to go to two or to three, and that's something I think this group need to discuss later on a little bit, but for that I need to go back to my draw board and to come back with a document. If it's not included in your report, it may be another path to discuss this difference between the ombudsman office and this complaint officer. Any other comments, or do you want to react to that before we go to the next slide? Okay. Then next one, it's a type of ombuds, and I guess that's just some highlight of the different types of ombuds office and evaluation criteria. Any comments? If not, let's go to the next slide, and that's stakeholder feedback. Any comments? And I have just one. It's that one of my questions is more on the next one. I guess it's when you try to have a percentage of something with a very small number, it's not really mathematically it's quite difficult, but I guess you will have some first inputs about how many respondents, where they come from, and all that in your report, or you will have I would say just those feedback. Thank you.
It's separate. Yes. Well, we will have the demographic information as well, so we'll show the affiliations, geographical regions, and how long people have been involved in ICANN, those sorts of details, so you get that sense of spread.
Okay, thank you, Deborah. Sébastien speaking. It's because where this 22 came from, it's just from the survey. You take some of the input of your interviews, or it's all that we need to have a clear view in the report, please.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Review? Questions? Okay, let's go to the next slide. Any questions? Okay, just in this previous slide, I was. Okay, go ahead. I wanted to ask, but I guess it will be easier to discuss that when we will have your full report. It's what do you mean by a new idea being proposed? Need policy definition of office role for operation design. Do you think that the current element we have in the different subgroup is enough? Not enough. Maybe you will suggest a framework define those new policy needs for the office. Phil, back to you.
Yeah, I think you probably need to see the words really to have a meaningful discussion about that.
Okay, then let's go to the next slide.
I'll go past this one, Sebastian, as I think it's more useful to go straight to the recommendations.
Okay. Any question, comments on the recommendation? Of the first slide of the recommendation? Asha, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Sebastian. I'm conscious that we only have 8 minutes left to the call, so I'll be brief, but I wanted to maybe state my questions up front, all of them. The first question I had was regarding this clarify role. First of all, thank you very much, Phil, for this, Phil and Deborah, for this presentation. My first question is on this clarify role bullet point. Can you elaborate? I know you have three sub-bullet points there, but could you elaborate a little bit more about this clarify role point you've made here? I would suspect that some of it has to do with the previous slide where you had the three categories of complaints. I wanted to get more feedback from you on that. The second question I had was on the next page. Shall I leave that for later? Okay, maybe I'll just tell you really quick now. The second question I had was on this independence, and I wanted to ask you about the I didn't quite catch what you meant about the compensation. Didn't hear you clearly, so I just wanted you to repeat what you said about compensation and about the lack of independence as a result of deciding a ombudsman salary and bonus. So if you could repeat that bit.
Sure.
And the third question I had was the fifth recommendation you said that was missing, and I'm sorry, again, I didn't hear you clearly. So those are the three questions I had. Thank you, Phil.
So if I could, I'll jump back to the previous slide, sorry, about the segmenting the complaints and clarifying the role. I think you did understand it.
Mm-hmm.
We were conscious that people had quite different expectations of the ombudsman function. I think that's a result of where they come from and the type of complaint that they're talking about. So we think that you could clarify quite a lot of that by
mm-hmm.
segmenting the complaints. We've suggested three ways of doing it. I'm sure Herb and others will have advice for us around that. But we think if you can segment those complaints, you can give people a clearer understanding of how and why the ombudsman will approach it in a particular way. So some of the frustration people have is that the ombudsman doesn't have the power to fix things. What is the point if the ombudsman can't fix things? Kind of feedback, and I think in some circumstances people could understand how that would work and have more accurate expectations of what the ombudsman can do if it was done that way. So I think that's what we meant there. I'm going to go to your second question.
Okay, that's clear.
Yeah, run out of time. Look, a number of people were conscious that the Ombudsman has a proportion of, just like all ICANN paid employees, has a proportion of their pay is at risk. And so whatever, I don't know the exact percentage, but it might be 25% of their income depends on their boss, the remuneration committee, being happy with their performance. And a number of people see that as being, non-independent. And people felt that when an ombudsman comes to the end of their contract, that an ombudsman who keeps a quiet shop will have more chance of being re-engaged than one who might be seen as a critic of the corporation.
Sorry, I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that. What did you say? Quiet shop? What did you say?
Yes, sorry, I shouldn't use expressions like that. Just that an ombudsman who is not critical of the corporation or not critical of the board will have, you know, more chance of being re-employed or having their contract extended than somebody who has been perceived to be a critic. And so a lot of people see that as non-independent. So we think there's ways you can improve that. The final question you had was about our guidance for different roles for the Ombudsman. So during our time talking to people at ICANN 58, a number of ideas were put to us about how the Ombudsman could be used in other processes. And we were just going to add another recommendation around that, setting out some principles for when that would work and when it wouldn't work.
Okay, so you gave an example there about privacy, and I didn't quite catch that one. Can you?
Could I
respond? Bill? I don't think it's Deborah speaking. It's not actually, I think the example that was given to us was document disclosure, so where there's a request for information, and it's been proposed that the Ombudsman should have a role in relation to that. So that was one suggestion. Another suggestion was around diversity, that the Ombudsman should have a role in sort of analysing data, setting expectations around diversity, reporting around that, and so should get involved in those sorts of diversity issues. So, but they're just two examples, and no doubt there'll be other things that will come up in the future. So, there's lots of complex considerations around those issues. I suppose what we're thinking we'll try and do is not so much answer those specific examples, but view them just as examples and more develop some principles and saying, well, when these sorts of ideas come up, how should you respond to them? What are the pros and the cons of the Ombudsman moving into that space and, the Ombudsman's remit going beyond the sort of traditional complaints handling role?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sorry to intervene here, but we are at the top of the hour almost. Can we agree that we have let's say 10 minutes extension of this call, or it's totally undoable for people? If you can in the chat or in the pod to say yes or no, and I will give the floor to Cheryl and I will come back to you, Asha. But I would like very much if you can be short. I know that we're at the end of this call, and because we need to discuss this slide. But Cheryl, you raised your hand. It's for you the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian, Cheryl, for the record. And I was certainly going to be brief because I hadn't I hadn't planned on making an extension, but I agree to it anyway. In the last few minutes or seconds of the call, just wanted to let both Phil and Deborah know that I am looking forward to reading their full documentation, and that unlike in some other circumstances when we've had external reviews presented even at this early and high level situation, that I'm not filled with dread and loathing. So I hope that's a good indicator. In the absence of all the actual gory details, I think it's something that I'm certainly looking forward to reading. But right now I'm not reaching for a blunt butter knife to do myself in, which I can't say has been the case with all the external reviews I've been involved with. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Yeah, I agree. Asha's extension of 10 minutes, it's not to finish the discussion, as we will have to discuss it again and maybe with a full report or part of the report next week. May I suggest that we do as short as possible, but we discuss this slide about next time. And Phil, can you tell us what was your thought with that, and then we can decide how we will handle the next calls and our next phase of the work. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, our suggestion was that we get the draft report finished and out to you for review by the latest May 29th. Well, hopefully we can do it a bit quicker than that, but give us a little bit of time to get it out to you by the 29th. And then schedule a more detailed discussion for June the 5th, if that works. They're just suggested dates from our side. So we would quite like to have you have the report in draft for a week, chance to read it all, and then come back to us and we have a detailed discussion. Probably need more than an hour. And we can sort of expand and get feedback from you and help us shape the report so that it's ready to submit.
Okay, here we have two proposals. We have the proposal to keep going the discussion next week, and then we'll leave you more time to finish your full report, or we get your report before the next call, and we will discuss again some of the today discussion and maybe others with your full report. My question is the next call, it's supposed to be the next call. Okay, it's on Tuesday the 13th. Different time zone. Okay, we have two proposals here. It's to have still some discussion and it's leave you more time to write your full report or your first draft. I don't think we have any need to rush for 1 week or another. I think we need to have to leave you as a time to work. Then it's really up to you. I was thinking in speaking. We can. Okay, go ahead, Asha, and Lars.
Yeah, sorry, Sebastian. A quick interruption. I just want to check: will this material be sent to us prior to the next call?
The proposal. It's written that. A draft report will be sent May 29th, just a day before. Then I don't think we will have
I meant this deck. This
deck will be in the report. Will be in the document on the page of this call. I guess as soon as it will be published by staff, and we will have it, or it will be sent through the list. But I will check with staff. Thank you, Asha, for the question. Before I give you the floor, Lars, I wanted to make the following suggestion: that we keep the next call on the 13th, and we follow this discussion and maybe some first feedback if we have the document prior. But frankly speaking, from my own point of view and experience, I will not be able to have read the full report in just one night. I don't think that we will be able to have a meaningful discussion on the report if we get to just one day prior. But Lars, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Sebastian. This is Lars. Sebastian, I think the original plan was that Phil and Deborah might be able to submit the report to the group over the next 1 or 2 days, which then would have given you time to discuss it on the 30th. But I think after some consultation, we might, it might be more advised to have the report out by the 29th or the 30th, and then for you to discuss the report actually a week later than originally anticipated, so the 5th. So what I was proposing in the chat is that if you don't want to just have a discussion on LIS, we might have another call if Phil and Deborah agree on the 29th or 30th. The 29th is a holiday in the UK, in the US. I'm not sure about Canada. And then maybe Phil and Deborah can then release the report the day after, if that would work for you. Thanks.
Okay, Herb, please, Sebastian speaking. Herb, go ahead, and I will try to give a proposal. Go ahead, Herb, please.
Thank you, Sebastian, Herb, for the record. Is this group tonight, Sebastian, the subgroup on the, we created a subgroup to look at the review. The people who were invited tonight, was it the entire working group, or is it just the subgroup that is present tonight and dealing with these issues? Thank you.
Thank you, Herb, for your question. Sebastian speaking. We don't have set up, we try to set up a subgroup, but it's never happened. In fact, our group is just working as a very small group of the full group, and it's something we have concerned us since a long time, but we can't change the behavior of the people. The one who were supposed to participate are not participating, and in fact, the people here today, with maybe one or two more, are the one who are always or almost always here, and as in fact a small group, other group. Then everybody were invited to this call, as everybody member and observer will be invited to the next call. The next call is on the 13th of May, as there are some holidays in some place of the world on the Monday. It's at, I guess it's 1 p.m. UTC next week. And I will suggest that we keep this call. We will follow this discussion, and if we have any first draft or summary of whatever before, great. If we don't have before, we will wait for after. But I think let's keep it and see when we get something. But if it's just a few hours or one day before the call, some of us or many of us will not be able to read it, then okay. I suggest that we stay with the current schedule, with the next call. When you have a document, maybe Phil, Deborah, and Lars, we can talk together and see when it's the best time to send it, or just before, just after the call. We will see. The next call will be the follow-up of this discussion with your presentation, and maybe one other topic if I can find one, and then the call on the, I don't know if it's the 5th of May or the 6th of May, I have to check when we will have a full discussion, because why I'm asking about the next call, the 5th of June, it's a holiday in some part of Europe, is I don't know what you call in English, but it's Pentecôte in French. But maybe nobody knows about that. Okay, sorry for this time. We take you 11 minutes more. Yeah, now I have echo. Thank you very much, and talk to you next week. We will try to organize better for the next time meeting. Sorry for the delay. The call is adjourned, and we can stop the recording. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sebastian. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.